This is the Winchester Talking newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 1st of July, 2020. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking newspaper. Our readers today are Ros Lydiard.
Hello.
Tom Williams.
Hello.
And Claire Porter.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter for this week, Peter Lydiard. Well, we begin with our usual regular notices. First, to say if you know anyone who is in sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Liz Legrees. Her contact number is on the key fob attached to your memory stick. Well, don't forget that while you're checking your box, can you make sure it has been plugged in and that the battery is charged? Now, as you listen to the recording, remember you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And one more note for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. You just go to the website, click on News, the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. And the recordings are listed in date order, with the most recent first on the list. So our headline stories for this week are drug-fueled attack on wall, Lib Dems warning to Tories after by-election, council slammed by former group leader, and council slashes homeless budget. So Ros, can we have the first headline story, please?
Yes, of course. Drug-fueled attack at wall. A man who had landed in an unprovoked, drunken and drug-fueled attack on the drinkers' wall in Winchester has avoided an immediate prison sentence. The judge said he risked criticism, but something must be done to stop the cycle of offending gripping. Joseph Flowers, he has landed an 8-month jail sentence, suspended for 2 years with alcohol treatment requirement. Flowers, 43, admitted assault causing actual bodily harm, in which he punched and kicked Anthony Steele after he refused to give him money. It happened outside King's Walk on Middlebrook Street, where all the recent years of drinking and drug addicts have regularly graduated before the council renewed the crenellated wall last month. CCTV footage of the attack was shown to the court. Winchester Crown Court was told that Flowers suffers mental health issues and had drunk a bottle of vodka, taken drugs, and damaged his room at the Trinity Centre, for which he was evicted, shortly before the attack on Sunday, March the 13th. The judge, Mr. Recorder Donald Tate said, "Some people might think I have gone soft in the head, but unless we break this vicious circle, we're going to be in court every few weeks." Steve Malloy, prosecuting, said Mr. Steele was sitting on a wall near Sainsbury's and saw the defendant asking about money. He approached the victim and asked him for money. Mr. Steele said, "I'm not going to give you money." And next thing he was waking up having been knocked to the floor. Mr. Steele was punched and then stamped on whilst on the ground, said Mr. Malloy. After the incident, the defendant approached him and apologised for what had happened. He said, "I know I'm going down for this and I am sorry, but I don't know what I've done." After watching CCTV of the attack, Flowers said, "Well, it wasn't the worst thing in the world, but it was out of order. Although both Flowers and the victim were described as being part of the homeless community in Winchester, Flowers aimed the court was given Flowers' address on the court was given as Down Great Alsford. Chloe J, mitigating, said her client had shown remorse. His childhood experiences resulted in him resorting to drug and alcohol abuse from the age of 14, with low self-esteem, defensiveness, and aggression. There has been a cycle of drug and mental health problems for many years. He is very depressed and finds it hard to get out of bed. He has his dignity, and he can't get a job, can't get a girlfriend. He is angry at the world. Miss J added, sending him to prison will not help. There is a need to break the substance abuse and seek help for mental health problems. Sentencing, the drug judge said, unless you address your drinking, you will be coming in and out of this court on a regular basis. I am going to give you an opportunity to address your issues. If I send you to prison, they will not be addressed at all. You will go in and come out, and nothing will have changed.
Thank you, Ros. Tom, please.
Lib Dems warning to Tories after by-election. Lib Dem leaders have issued a warning to Tories in Winchester after securing an historic double by-election victory. This comes after Conservatives lost their former stronghold of Tiverton and Honiton to the Lib Dems, surrendering a majority of more than 24,000 on June the 23rd. Richard Ford won the Devon seat with more than 22,000 votes after the constituency saw a swing of almost 30%. Reacting to the victory, Lib Dems parliamentary candidate for Winchester and Chandler's Ford, Danny Chambers, said the Liberal Democrats have made political history. We have overturned one of the safest seats in the whole country for the Tories. If voters are frustrated and angry enough with this government to overturn a 24,000 majority in Devon, the Lib Dems have every chance of winning in Winchester and other places in Hampshire. Mr. Chambers added, this by-election result sends a loud and clear message. It is time for Boris Johnson to go, and go now. This is also a message to the government that they've got to do more to tackle the cost of living crisis. People are really feeling the pinch right now, and we need someone sensible leading us through this difficult time, not Boris Johnson. We need a government that focuses on reducing energy bills by helping people insulate their homes and move to renewable forms of energy. We need a government that protects British businesses and farmers, which are struggling to trade with our closest allies and neighbours in Europe. We also need a government that cuts backlogs in our NHS and sorts out ambulance waiting times. People want change, and they want a credible government. Tory MPs are now expressing their concerns about being able to retain Conservative seats. Tory grandee Sir Geoffrey Clinton-Brown said there is no doubt it would be difficult to hold his seat if there were by-election in his constituency now. Speaking to BBC Radio 4's Today programme, the MP for the Cotswolds and Treasurer of the 1922 Committee said, I think factually, if I were to run under a bus today, it would be difficult to hold my seat. There's no doubt about that. I feel very sorry for all our volunteers and indeed my colleagues and indeed myself, who work very hard in these by-elections. But we were simply defeated by the situation that we find ourselves in at the moment. Steve Brine, MP, has been approached for comment.
Thank you, Tom. Claire, your piece, please.
Council slammed by former group leader. Winchester City Council has been slammed for the wholly inappropriate way in which it deals with major issues. During a town forum meeting on Thursday, June the 16th, former councillor and Labour group leader Patrick Davies used public participation time to hit out at civic chiefs for conducting business in clandestine groups. Following up on comments he made at a previous cabinet meeting in May, Mr. Davies said, "When the town forum was crudely set up, there were three parties represented. It has now essentially become a one-party state, and I don't think that's healthy. I think the role, the function, and the duties it can't do need to be seriously reviewed. I have long been concerned about the way the council operates, specifically now with the town forum, through informal groups." Referencing an independent investigation into how the council dealt with the £165 million Silver Hill scheme, he said, "Bearing in mind the very severe criticism some years back by Claire Lloyd-Jones, who described in her report a perfect storm in relation to the way the Silver Hill issue had been handled, she specifically referred to the danger of informal groups. That is what concerns me most about the town forum. You've set up half a dozen of these groups, which meet in private, and the only report back is from the chairs coming here." Responding to his comments, Councillor Mike Krasker, the newly elected chair of the forum, said, "These are thoughts I actually have a lot of sympathy with and share myself, certainly around the role of the town forum. There are definitely some things I think we can do differently in terms of those informal groups. We are obviously restricted in some way by the constitution on how the forum can operate, but there is a lot more we can offer in terms of engagement." Councillor Krasker said he would like to further discuss Mr. Davies' concerns with Councillor Martin Todd, who was absent from the meeting after testing positive for COVID. "Just to demonstrate how I'd like to get some changes in our approach, what I agreed with Councillor Jackie Porter is that in our forward plan to September, we would have the local plan as an item on that agenda," he said. "As part of that item, we will have a resident event, so we will include and take voices from those who are local. For me, that's an example of how I'd like to see a different approach of the role of the town forum."
Thank you, Claire. Now, my headline piece is headed "Council Slashes Homelessness Budget." Urgent talks are to be held between the Winchester Beacon and council bosses after it was announced that the charity would have thousands slashed from its annual funding. The Beacon, which offers 24-hour support for its homeless residents, is set to see a reduction of almost £10,000 from its £60,000 purse it received from Winchester City Council last year. An additional 17 to 20% is to be cut from the County Council grant, with the authority needing to make huge savings of £80 million by April 2023. That's to recuperate losses made during the pandemic. The charity previously said that while it was understood savings had to be made, the cuts could lead to a reduction in its life-changing support. Michelle Price, Chief Executive of Winchester Beacon, said, "We are disappointed by any news of potential funding cuts to our service, and we will be meeting both Hampshire County Council and Winchester City Council representatives in the next few weeks for urgent talks about our future funding." Now, this comes after Hampshire County Council recently agreed on a reduction of £360,000 from its homelessness support services, with a significant amount of those savings being made in Winchester. Councillor Liz Fairhurst, the Executive Member for Adult Services and Public Health, said, "The statutory responsibility for supporting people who are homeless rests with district and borough local authorities. Given this, and the increasing financial pressures the County Council is experiencing, our support for homelessness services across Hampshire will reduce by £360,000 each year from next April. We will, however, continue to spend some £2 million per annum to help deliver accommodation for the most vulnerable homeless people, as well as outreach and community support in those areas where accommodation is harder to access." Meanwhile, the City Council confirmed the cuts while finalising its spending plan for the 2022-23 Homelessness Prevention Grant, though it didn't pass without challenge. Speaking on behalf of Councillor Caroline Horrell, who was absent from the meeting, Councillor Michael Reid said, "The key project I'm most concerned about is the Beacon. It does receive small allocations of money from other council budgets, but the importance of this facility to our homeless provision is critical, and the money they receive accommodates that. The Beacon provides 10 beds in Winchester with a priority allocation. Without this facility, the responsibility of this council would be significant. The Beacon is also under pressure from reduced funding from the county, which is significant for the charity. I would therefore ask the Cabinet to reconsider the allocation of monies to the Beacon, given the importance of its place in the general homelessness provision in the district." Responding to Councillor Horrell's comments, Karen Thorburn, Strategic Housing Manager for Winchester City Council, said, "In total, we will be funding the Beacon in the region of £50,000, coming from the Homeless Prevention Grant and the Communities Grant. Last year, we funded them just £60,000, and that included some capital funding to go towards a property they purchased to move on accommodation." Ms Thorburn added, "Council have funded them quite substantially over the last 3 years, and they have announced they are going to reduce that funding in the region of 17 to 20%. Now, I do appreciate Councillor Horrell's comments regarding the Beacon, but we have limited funds and we have to serve all the residents of Winchester as best we possibly can with those funds. Gillian Knight, Head of Housing Options and Allocations, added, "We are focused on making sure the grant is equally shared out so all households facing homelessness receive some kind of support from us. Single homelessness tends to be the high-profile issue, but there are many other forms of homelessness. And so while the Beacon is very much appreciated by the council, I do feel that the grant which we've awarded this year is reflective, considering it is topped up by Hampshire County Council." Well, next we have the death notices, and that will be followed by Christian comment. Ball, Michael Leonard Ball, peacefully at home on the 15th of June.
Burgoyne, Doris Emily Burgoyne, peacefully on the 20th of June, aged 92.
Durrant, Peggy Durrant, MBE, peacefully on the 28th of June, aged 92.
Harrington, Thomas James Harrington, known as Tom, peacefully on the 23rd of June, aged 91.
Harrison, John Stuart Harrison, born in 1932, ex-naval officer and school teacher.
Moreau, Arthur Moreau, peacefully on the 21st of June. He proudly served with the Royal Hampshire Regiment in Malaya. Funeral will take place on the Isle of Wight on the 15th of July at 3:30. Members of the Royal Hampshire Regiment Comrades, Malaya and Borneo Veterans Association are invited to attend.
Price, Derek Keith Price, peacefully in Basingstoke Hospital on the 5th of June, aged 88.
Roger, George Douglas Roger, passed away 17th of June, aged 77.
Young, Catherine Young, former landlady of the Bush Inn at Ovington, peacefully on the 18th of June, aged 77. Well, now we have Christian comment read by Claire, please.
This week it has been written by Rosemary Baker, and she has headed it Our Reading Challenge. I seem to have been inundated with emails and notifications headed Summer Reading. Some are new books, others pre-loved, others bargains to stock up on. This reminded me of a radio programme I heard recently about some research that had been done as to whether reading was good for you. We live in an age where we can spend hours binging on TV box sets or surfing social media. But despite these distractions, reading remains a popular pastime. There is still a huge market for novels, with some bestsellers selling around 500,000 copies a year in the UK alone. We know that reading is good for us as it improves our literacy, but does it offer any other benefits? Reading can help us to develop our own ideas and personalities. It's good for our health too. Studies show that it can increase our emotional intelligence as we understand a range of perspectives and motivations. There is some evidence that mental stimulation is one of the factors that can delay the onset of dementia, and reading is among the activities that can help to keep the brain active. It is not the passive pastime that it appears. As well as this, research suggests that reading for 30 minutes a week increases our health and well-being. Reading for pleasure has been found to improve our confidence and self-esteem. It can also improve sleep and reduce feelings of loneliness. According to the Guinness Book of Records, the Bible is the best-selling book of all time and still occupies this position. It is estimated that over 5 billion copies have been sold and distributed. The Quran is about 190 million. Some ways behind is J.K. Rowling's first Harry Potter novel, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, at 120 million. So the Bible remains popular, but how many of us read it, despite being encouraged to do so by modern translations and selections with explanations in Bible reading notes for study? And would you, if you did not believe it, was something you should do? Last week, I was asked to write a service, including a sermon, for the benefit of people unable to attend church. It was a strange discipline, and I found myself struggling with a passage that I did not know well. I had not written and or preached a sermon since before lockdown. Afterwards, I listened, too late to be of any help, to the finalists for Preacher of the Year on YouTube. I was struck by the fact that the person judged the winner concentrated on one passage and what it had to say to individuals. However, I'm not sure that either this sermon or mine would have been of any interest to people outside the church. This is our challenge for today. And that was written by Rosemary Baker.
Thank you, Claire. Now we move on to letters to the editor, We normally have a large number of letters to read. Well, not this week, for some reason. Ros, can you read the first of our six letters, please?
The first I've chosen is congratulations. What an absolute pleasure to read the Coates and Seeley Winery has been awarded a platinum medal at the December Worldwide Awards. That's Chronicle, June 23rd. A British company selling wine at the George V Hotel in Paris is an awesome achievement. Supplying wine to some of our most famous hotels, including the Dorchester and the Savoy, is to be celebrated, and indeed Kensington Palace. Congratulations, Coates and Seeley Winery. And that's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
And the next letter is from J. Martin, and it's headed Call Off Strikes. When the people of this country were fighting hard to get through COVID, so many stood up in the streets to be counted. Now here we are, possibly just about on the other side of the pandemic disease. What rears its ugly head? Oh, so easily forgotten is the spirit and commitment as was personified by Captain Tom Moore. His motives were the country and our health service first. Personal gain and recognition very much second. If anyone in these phony days of celebrity adoration deserved his knighthood, it was certainly him. Currently faced with a potential economic meltdown, with an horrendous war going on that is destroying millions of lives and affecting the price of numerous goods worldwide, so many people here seem to be lining up to demand that they deserve to have a guaranteed job for life and a wage rise in keeping with the rate of inflation. Seems that we are now being forced to agree with the demands of workers, who in the main are employed via the state and largely by organisations who have a monopoly-based powers. In raw terms, the message is, give me what I want. If not, I am willing to cause substantial financial damage to the company, organisation, who employ me. Let me alone to destroy the general economy. I don't give a care if anyone along our way action takes down other employers and hurts ordinary people who depend on a regular and reliable train service, as long as I'm all right, Jack. I'm a believer in trade unions. I support and acknowledge the influence they have had in improving working conditions for all. I feel it would be reasonable to ask that rail unions give something back by holding off strike action for 6 months and instead return full-time to their negotiating table with their employers. One can only hope. That's from J. Martin of Hedge End.
Thank you, Tom. Claire, please.
This letter is headed The Need for Traffic Calming. It's interesting that there is a campaign to stop the closure of Andover Road because the residents of Barton Farm worry about the traffic that will divide this new estate. Equally understandable, residents on Andover Road were not keen on having more houses where there used to be farmland. Perhaps they were offered the closure of this noisy road. Does it not illustrate how people don't like busy and fast traffic, but prefer low traffic neighbourhoods and green spaces? I fully agree with both sides. We have too many busy roads that divide communities. Badger Farm Road, Worthy Lane, St Cross Road, Eastern Lane. I'm sure many agree that we need to calm down traffic by slowing it down to 20 miles an hour within the boundaries of Winchester and reduce traffic into the town centre to make it safer and give more space to cycle, scooter or walk. A decent bus service from surrounding villages into Winchester is vital, especially now that many can no longer afford to drive their cars. But Hampshire County Council is planning to cut bus services instead of finding ways to finance more services. Sadly, the petition to keep Andover Road does nothing to encourage active travel, but instead replaces one radial route into the city centre with two, leading to further car congestion there. This city needs change alternately to remain one of the best places to live in the UK. Putting more houses around Winchester without promoting active travel will increase our congestion and certainly not help this cause. And that's written by Max Priesman, Oliver's Battery Road South, Winchester.
Thank you, Claire. The letter that I'm going to read is written by Michael Carden, and it's headed Fake Heraldry. Michael Campbell's letter of interest in the shields on the front of the old art school building adjoining the Guildhall reminds me that when they were first fixed there, I asked what they each represented and was told they were just a random collection of shields that someone had chosen from a catalogue because they looked nice. Now, from my limited knowledge of heraldry, I think they must be from a foreign source because I don't believe they follow the rules of the College of Arms. Though decorative, I think it is disappointing they have no connection with Winchester. While writing, may I also correct a misunderstanding in a letter of some months ago that attributed the purchase of the Frink horse to our local authorities. About 1980, when Elizabeth Frink had a sculpture exhibition in Winchester, she so liked the position chosen for the horse and rider that she offered it to the city at a considerably discounted price. When the authorities declined, Sir Colin Stanfield Smith thought it a wonderful opportunity to acquire the sculpture and had the idea of asking all the architects in Hampshire whether they would fund its purchase. He wrote a letter to every practice in the county, which he asked me to join him in signing. I can't remember how many there were, but it took some time for my wrist to recover. The response was most gratifying, and this, I believe, is why we now have this exceptional work of art that has since been listed. I have always thought that its position is so pleasing because the horse and rider can be seen as guarding the entrance to the law courts, or merely pausing for a gap in the traffic before crossing the road. If I'm wrong about either of these recollections, I would very much appreciate a correction. And a final piece of local information. I wonder how many people know that the wheel stones under the nearby Westgate Arch are so little worn for their medieval setting because they came from the entry arch into Guildhall Yard, at the suggestion of the City of Winchester Trust, when the entry to the yard was closed to create the tourist office and the area around the Westgate was being repaved. There was a sign recording this, which has sadly disappeared. That letter was written by Michael Carden, MBE, AA Diploma, RIBA, Christchurch Road, Winchester.
And I have a letter from Anne Roberts. It doesn't enjoy a title, but I think the subject will be familiar. The powerful points made by Ian Tate to the Winchester Town Forum and echoed in your editorial should be taken on board by the City Council. Chronicle, June the 23rd. I understand that the police and community wardens had originally suggested that redirecting the CCTV, combined with services such as drop-in centre to help the protagonist, was all that was required. No need for the ugly abortive work to King's Walk. And again, that's from Anne Roberts, Avenue Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Tony Smith gives his opinions on city violence. City violence. Winchester City Council's failure to deal effectively with the antisocial behaviour and bylaw breaking drinkers in the city centre shouldn't be a surprise to anyone who living in the centre, as I do. It is simply indicative of their inept management of the city centre over many years, I don't know if they just don't see the problem, understand the problems, just don't care enough to do anything about them. Yes, I know there are a few streets off the sides, but Winchester is primarily a one-street centre, from City Bridge to Upper High Street. And it is a disgrace. There are rough sleepers in doorways, beggars asking for money, often aggressively, and A-boards everywhere, blocking what little space is left, plus a market that's clearly in the wrong place. Most weeks, one or more shop fronts are willfully smashed, and I've yet to read of anyone apprehended for or charged. Does anyone ever check the CCTV? I hear that some addicts and alcoholics regularly walk into our city centre supermarkets and help themselves to expensive meat and produce and walk out without being challenged. It beggars belief, pun intended. The latest scourge are the food delivery vehicles that park wherever they want with impunity, it seems. Whilst the high street was beautifully paved a few years back, the Broadway's scruffy, patched-up pavements haven't been improved in decades. Now, with so many trip hazards and a pavement that floods outside the bus station every time we have a heavy rain. It just looks so tacky now around the Guildhall and tourist office. What a terrible first impression our visitors must have, especially if they take the urban decay alleyway alongside Patisserie Valerie that so often reeks of urine. Following excavation work outside the Tesco store, a temporary repair was made in the new paving with black tarmac. It must be a year ago. I understand there's a statutory period by which such repairs must be restored, which surely cannot be this long. Does nobody care? There are lots of towns and cities in the UK that do it much better than we do, most without a heritage to protect, and practically every historic city in Europe. Is it beyond the will of man to identify good practice elsewhere and bring back some to Winchester? If the past is any indication, it's very unlikely, given the commitment of our council has demonstrated. That is from Tony Smith of Eastgate Street, Winchester.
Thank you, Tom. Now, if you have an opinion on or a subject that you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them by telephone on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836. Or you can email them, news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester. Or you could even drop in when you're next in Winchester. Well, now we move on to editorial comment, which is being read by Tom, please.
Yes, the comment this week is again about city centre violence, and it has a question. How to stop city centre violence? For the second time in two issues, this column discusses the growing level of violence and antisocial behaviour in Winchester city centre. We have reported on two stories. Firstly, the shocking attack at the Drinker's Wall in Middlebrook Street that was captured on CCTV and now published on the Chronicle website. Secondly, the proposed cuts to funding for homeless services, including the Winchester Beacon on Jury Street. There is a clear link between the level of public funding and the amount of antisocial behaviour in the city. Increased funding before the age of austerity had made inroads in addressing the issue. The attacker, Joseph Flowers, was sentenced last Friday and was described at the Crown Court as part of the city's homeless community. He would have had no complaint about prison sentence for the appalling incident on a Sunday afternoon in a crowded street. But the judge was right to give him a chance to tackle his alcohol problem and begin to address his underlying mental health issues. The alternative would have seen him spend months in prison with no treatment for his problems.
Thank you, Tom. Now, the opinion piece this week is written by George Hayter, and it's headed Book Now for Time Travel. Actors try to make audiences experience another time and place. Last month, four performers managed to do that for me. I felt that I travelled back in time half a century. The two-hour show transporting me back to my 1960s childhood was in a theatre 50 miles away in Kingston-upon-Thames, where my son lives. He had organised the tickets for Father's Day. The sold-out show started in the dark, with a brief film flashing through Harold Wilson, Twiggy, and other 60s news footage. Then a deafening drum-de-rum and white light bleached the stage, and standing on it were the Beatles, pounding into She Loves You. Agile Paul on the left, insolent-looking John on the right, and gangly George between them, with lovable Ringo thrashing away at the back. Well, they weren't the real Beatles, of course. These were the bootleg Beatles, talented musicians who for 42 years have been faultlessly impersonating the most famous pop maestros in history. The sound was close to the records, the clothes looked identical to those worn by the Fab Four, Paul's Hofner violin bass, Ringo's Ludwig kit and the Vox amps were the same as the original group's. Their demeanour was spot on, the way they stood, sat, moved around the stage and addressed the mic. Surely they have studied every frame of Beatles archive film. The Bootleg Beatles were formed in 1980 by the stars of Beatlemania, a Broadway play. After its New York run, the musical transferred to the West End. When the London run finished, the four actors found themselves unemployed. Within weeks, they were rehearsing for a new Beatle-mimicking career as a band on the road. They struggled to attract an audience in the UK, but they had more luck abroad, touring successfully in Europe and beyond. In Britain, their popularity was boosted by Oasis, who booked the Bootleg Beatles to be a support act at a big open-air gig. Since then, the Bootleg Beatles have performed at Glastonbury and Buckingham Palace and on TV. The personnel has changed over the years. None of the original members remain. Performances are divided into sections with film montages between. Usually the first section centres on 1962 and 1963, with them appearing as mock tops with neat Beatles suits. Different suits and longer hair for the mid-60s before psychedelic Sgt. Pepper suits exemplify 1967. A typical show might end with them in clothes representing the zebra crossing photo on the front cover of Abbey Road. George in blue, John in white, Paul in grey, suit and no shoes, etc. The shows differ. A friend of mine saw the Bootleg Beatles at the Albert Hall, where the show included side two of Abbey Road. The show I saw had nothing from Abbey Road, with the Beatles' first years represented instead by the tracks of the Let It Be LP. As well as the four members of the actual Bootleg Beatles, nearly a dozen other musicians contributed everything from viola to sax and from flute to the fireman's bell on Penny Lane. The audience shouted and screamed. Some danced. According to the website, the next time the Bootleg Beatles will appear in Hampshire is April the 5th, 2023, at Basingstoke. Ticket prices average about £36. This is one production where I think cheap seats are actually the best seats. We had the cheapest seats, sitting almost at the back row of the top balcony. We were looking down steeply at the stage and saw little of the performers' eyes. But I soon realised that this was a good thing. They were not the real Beatles, so clearly not seeing their faces make it easy imagining that they were. On the way home, we laughed about the powerful show. "Oh, it made me so nostalgic for the 60s, my son said. And I wasn't even born then. My teenage sister saw the real Beatles perform live, but I was too young. Right, well, we now have two pieces from Bel Garum, who, as you know, has an alternative look at the news. The first item from Ros, please.
Well, yes. This is a bouncy replacement for trip hazards. Paving slabs. Winchester has hundreds, if not thousands of them, befitting our historic city. The snag is that they get pushed out of position and become a trip hazard, especially where near to trees whose roots often rise as they grow, pushing the slabs out of shape. Last week, many slabs on the Broadway near to the bus stops outside Abbey House were replaced with a synthetic material that combines wood chipping and some rubbery compound. The new surface is very springy, which Bel Garum found quite pleasant to walk on, but it could cause a new problem for people of more limited mobility, for whom bounciness is not ideal trying to walk.
Claire, please.
Traditional shop warnings returning to city. St George's Street and the High Street in Winchester have seen a recent rise in the number of shop warnings, once thought to be a relic of a bygone age. The need for shade over shop windows, beyond aesthetics, has long since vanished, with air conditioning becoming more widespread. However, with the recent heat wave paired with surging energy prices, businesses are returning to tried and tested methods of keeping cool. A member of staff at Basil Leaf Deli on St George's Street said, "We put up the covering 2 or 3 weeks ago to protect the fruit from the sun. It also looks nice and makes the shop more visible to passing cars." Though only 10 out of over 100 shops and restaurants on these two streets now bear canopy awnings and go largely unnoticed by consumers, the overall effect brings back into view the charge and charm and elegance long associated with the city of Winchester.
Thank you, Claire. Now, a few items that caught my eye of things that are happening in the district, which you might be interested in. There's a concert by the Winchester Symphony Orchestra, the final one under musical director Nicholas Wilkes, and that takes place on Thursday, July the 7th, in the Thorndon Hall, Chandler's Ford. The concert is also its young soloist competition, with four brilliant young musicians from Hampshire all taking the opportunity to perform a concerto with the orchestra. The programme, Vaughan Williams Oboe Concerto, Jacob Bassoon Concerto, Reinick Flute Concerto, Glazunov Violin Concerto. The Watercress Line is hosting a weekend of heritage diesel traction, with the return of the ever-popular Diesel Gala from July the 15th to the 17th. Visiting diesel engines and the Watercress Line's home fleet will showcase different types of diesel locomotives manufactured from the 1960s to the present day. The gala weekend will also see the return of the Barn Owl event at Ropley, with a chance to enjoy real ale and other refreshments on board passing trains on the Friday and Saturday evenings. If you're interested in folk music, there is the New Forest Folk Festival, which takes place at Powell's Farm, Plateford, near Romsey, and that runs from the 7th to the 9th of July. Also on the 9th of July, there's a concert headed from Bohemia to Broadway, an evening of opera and musical theatre. That is at St Peter's Church, Stockbridge, and it starts at 7:30. Four fine young singers and their pianists set to perform an evening of opera musical theatre. So something to look forward to there. Well, and finally, before we go on to items of general news, I know that you're all sitting on the edge of your seats waiting for the lighting up time. So I won't make you wait any longer. The sun, if there is any, will rise at about 5 a.m. and set again at about 9:30 p.m. Two items of general news. Roz, have your first article, please.
Yes, I've got a teddy bear collection at auction. A woman from Wiltshire who has amassed a collection of more than 1,500 teddy bears over 58 years will put many of the toys up for auction. Oh. Lynd Fairhurst's collection is to go under the hammer as part of the Teddy Bears, Dolls, Dolls, Horses and Traditional Toys auction in Newbury. Yes, in Newbury, sorry, organised by Special Auction Services. Sorry about that. Ms. Fairhurst, 69, has parted with 1,000 of her bears ahead of the auction, a selection which she has been told might fetch between £30,000 and £35,000. I wish I kept my teddies. The sales are part of a wider auction which will include a rare Titanic teddy, believed to have been created shortly after the ship sinking, in 1912, and dolls made by liberated concentration camp workers in 1945. Ms. Fairhurst does not plan to attend the auctions, but promised that there are some very good bears going up for grabs. She has also given away many of the bears' clothes, chairs and other decorative items to be auctioned. The collection was so large that the auctioning, which will be spread out across June, July and August, other teddies that are not Ms. Fairhurst are also expected to do well. The stiff back mohair Titanic teddy bear is estimated at 5,000 to 8,000, among other historically significant toys. Four Polish Bergen-Belsen concentration camp 1945 Liberation Red Cross cloth dolls will go under the hammer. Ouch. They were made by liberated Polish women from the concentration camp and provided comfort to those who were nursed by British Red Cross nurses and doctors after the Second World War.
Thank you, Rose. Tom, please.
Baton relay to visit Winchester. Winchester is one of six areas that's been selected within the South East region to take part in the Queen's Baton Relay for this year's upcoming Commonwealth Games. The Queen's Baton Relay was launched on October the 7th last year from Buckingham Palace, where the Queen placed her message to the Commonwealth inside the baton. The baton then departed from Birmingham for a 254-day journey, travelling through each Commonwealth nation and territory in Europe, Africa, Asia, Oceania, and the Americas, before returning to the UK, covering a total of 140,000 kilometres. The baton will visit Winchester on July the 6th at the Winchester Sport and Leisure Centre and University of Winchester Sports Stadium at approximately 2 p.m. The new state-of-the-art sport and leisure park, coupled with the University of Winchester's high-profile athletic track, are key factors for Winchester having been given the opportunity to showcase the baton. Winchester City Council, in partnership with Everyone Active and the University of Winchester, have organised a primary school Commonwealth Games sports festival. Over 100 pupils from selected local primary schools will take part in a range of Commonwealth sports from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. on the 6th of July. When the baton arrives on site, children will have the opportunity to walk around the athletics track with the baton. The Blue Apple Theatre will be performing a dance routine while the baton is on its journey round the track. From 1 p.m. onwards, the public are invited to join a community picnic at the University of Winchester Sports Stadium grounds for an opportunity for families to see the baton arrive. Winchester has two venues for the baton within the district, with the next stop at Hambledon's Broad Halfpenny Down Cricket Ground at approximately 4 p.m. Winchester College will be playing against the Brigands, who usually play on the ground. The baton will be greeted, and the team will run around the outfield, then meet players and spectators at the Monument and in the Baton Ball pub. Councillor Lucille Thompson, Winchester City Council's campaign member for business and culture, said, "It's a huge honour for Winchester District to be hosting the Queen's Relay Baton at two fantastic locations. We have invested a lot into improving the sports and leisure facilities for our local residents, and we are honoured to have our district chosen twice in this showcase event for the Queen's Baton Relay."
Thank you, Tom. Claire, please.
Council to take legal action over travellers. Legal action is being taken to remove two groups of travellers who have set up camp at separate sites in Winchester. Both the County and City Council are seeking eviction orders to turf out the unauthorised settlements from the South Winchester Park and Ride car park and the Garrison Grounds playing fields. Civic chiefs at Hampshire County Council say one of the groups has already defied a request to vacate the Park and Ride car park, despite visits from both police and council representatives. A spokesperson for the council said, "We are aware of the travellers who are currently located without prior permission on County Council-owned land adjacent to South Winchester Park and Ride. Following a site visit to assess the situation and to discuss welfare issues, we have issued a notice to request the travellers vacate the land. However, this has not been complied with. We are now seeking a court hearing to progress an eviction order. Travellers took over part of the car park last week, with residents reportedly seeing pickup trucks towing caravans towards the park and ride on Monday, June the 20th. When the Chronicle visited the site on Thursday, there were around five large caravans and a number of work vehicles parked by the tree line at the far end of the lot. This isn't the first time the park and ride car park has been used as a base for an illegal settlement. In 2017, a group of more than 50 travellers moved onto the site. Just last year, a further 19 caravans were moved on from the Otterbourne Road location. Other park and ride car parks, including St Catherine's, have also proved popular spots. Hampshire Police has said it has already sent officers to assess the situation. A spokesperson said, "We are working closely with the landowners, Winchester City Council, to seek a suitable resolution." Meanwhile, a City Council spokesperson has said they are aware of the second group of travellers who have been occupying the playing fields at the Garrison Ground next to Winchester Sport and Leisure Park since Sunday, insisting they are already in the process of moving them from the Bar End site as quickly as possible. Officers were seen visiting the leisure centre on Tuesday evening and Wednesday morning, although it isn't yet clear whether any action was taken. Hampshire Police have been contacted for comment. City Council chiefs have confirmed the group they are currently dealing with have no relation to those who are still occupying the park and ride facility.
Thank you, Claire. My piece is headed Students to Grace West End Stage. Students from Stagecoach Winchester are among 15 other schools from across the UK that took to the Shaftesbury Theatre on June the 26th. The West End venue has been home to two other successful performances by Stagecoach students earlier this year, as many students missed out on performing live in 2020. Stagecoach Winchester principal Donna Batten said, "Stagecoach Winchester has been established in the area for the past 26 years, and we welcome around 250 pupils through our doors every week. The students performing this evening have been selected from across all our schools and are extremely excited to have been asked to take part. We are very proud of them all, as they have worked so hard in all rehearsals." Stagecoach Winchester is part of a network of more than 3,000 extracurricular performing arts schools worldwide. Stagecoach aims to make a difference in its students' lives, and many children have gone on to study and work in performing arts, from blockbuster films to countless roles in local theatre productions. Early stages classes are available for children aged 4 to 6, and main stages classes take place for 6 to 18-year-olds every weekend during term time. For more information about Stagecoach Winchester, visit their website, www.stagecoach.co.uk, or you can call them on 07 592 63008. That is 07 592 63 0088. And Ros, please.
Yes, those peregrine chicks are in the news again. This time they've been named. Winchester Cathedral's peregrine chicks have been given names by the young choristers. They started to fly, the peregrine chicks, that is, at the start of June, and have been monitored by Keith Betton, chairman of the Hampshire Ornithological Society. The choristers were given a choice of three names for each chick. For the male, they were Louis, Charles and George. For the female, they were Elizabeth, Emma and Cecilia. They chose George for the male and Elizabeth for the female. As George and Elizabeth grow in size and confidence, they can be seen flying around the north side perimeter of the cathedral, following Winnie and William collecting food.
Thank you, Rose. Tom, please.
Junior doctors celebrated for their contributions. Junior doctors at Hampshire Hospital NHS Foundation Trust have been celebrated for their incredible contribution to patient care at an annual awards ceremony. This year's annual Junior Doctors Awards returned with a record number of nominations from both patients and staff at Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, with nearly 300 nominations received. The awards are held in recognition of the hard working across Andover War Memorial Hospital, Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital, and Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. Each year, both patients and colleagues can nominate junior doctors across nine categories, including rising stars and patient champions. Foundation doctor Dr. Andrew Gray picked up two awards on the night for Basingstoke patient champion and Registrar Dr. Rising Star. Andrew was nominated for his support and kindness towards patients, their relatives and colleagues. He said, "It means a great deal to have been put forward for these awards by my colleagues, with so many other deserving nominees. I always try to create an environment where colleagues can ask for my advice, no matter how small or silly they think the question is, or how busy I am. I am really lucky to work with such talented people and hope I can inspire more trainees to think about medicine and respiratory care as a career." The junior doctors working in the emergency department in Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital and Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester were in high spirits after winning Team of the Year award. Dr. Chinnai Wachi, who was presented with the MDT, that's Multidisciplinary Team Hero Award, nominated for going above and beyond for her colleagues and patients alike, was described as compassionate, caring, and overall an amazing human being. Other winners included Dr. Amy Dweck, who was awarded the Winchester Patient Champion Award, and Dr. Aaron Simpson, who was recognised in his role as a quality improvement trailblazer, thanks to his work on improving communications for a department within general surgery. Chief Medical Officer for Hampshire, Dr. Lara Alloway, added, "It's a fantastic opportunity to say thank you to our junior doctors who work so hard each day to care for our patients."
Thank you, Tom. Claire, please.
Warning over golf pro fraud. A professional golfer at a historic course has been warned he faces a long prison sentence after he was convicted of defrauding more than £50,000 in club green fees and charity golf days. Stephen Hunter, who's 54, was head pro at Royal Winchester Golf Club, where membership fees are £1,300 a year. When he underdeclared the money paid by visitors to play the course and kept the difference for himself. A four-week trial heard Hunter was caught out after club staff discovered consistent discrepancies totalling more than £45,000 over almost 2 years. An investigation discovered more than £11,000 in profit from two charity days went into Hunter's bank account, and less than £50 was given to the charity. Despite Hunter's defence that he has simply got the maths wrong with the green fees and had used the money from the charity days to pay for the events, a unanimous jury at Salisbury Crown Court found him guilty of four counts of fraud. Judge Andrew Barnett warned Hunter he was facing prison. "These frauds that have been uncovered and you have now been found guilty of are extremely serious, and the overwhelming likelihood is there will be a long prison sentence." In all, Hunter was convicted of 4 out of 5 counts of fraud. Excuse me. The trial had heard how Hunter had been working at the golf club since the late 1980s and ran the club shop through his business, Stephen Hunter Golf Shops Limited. But in July 2018, concerns were raised by club manager Stuart Dubber after he noticed the green fees takings should have been £3,710 for the previous month, when Hunter had only declared £1,075. Prosecutor Tom Nicholson told the trial Hunter abused his position as head pro, was misleading, false and deceptive, and cheated the taxman. He said he consistently underreported the green fees paid by visitors, keeping the difference when his contract said it was the club's money. Mr. Dubber started comparing the club's accounts to the visitor book, a laborious process, and he felt the issue repeated itself in previous months. Green fees were consistently and considerably lower. 2018 income should have been about £16,000 up to June, when the defendant only reported just over £5,000. about 30% of what had actually been paid. He took advantage of the trust he had built up, trust he earned as a long-standing member of the club. Hunter, who now lives in Abbotsworthy, near Winchester, will be sentenced next month.
Thank you, Claire. My piece is headed Hampshire COVID Cases. Hampshire hospitals are currently caring for 90 patients who have tested positive for COVID. This is across the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Basingstoke, North Hampshire Hospital and Andover War Memorial Hospital. That's as of June the 24th. NHS England data shows the number of people being treated in hospital for COVID-19 by 9 a.m. on June the 21st was up from 68 on the same day the previous week. Number of beds at Hampshire County Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust occupied by people who tested positive for COVID increased by 70% in the last 4 weeks. And Ros, please.
Yes. This one is Community Cafe raises money for charity. Sunshine brought smiles and a good time to the Community Cafe as it returned to raise money for a good cause. Wanston Community Cafe was held on a sunny day in June, and most of the visitors enjoyed sitting outside next to the roses in the glorious sunshine. A spokesperson said, sales of coffee and cake were brisk, especially when the when the Ladies Cycling Club and the Aqua Ladies arrived. A total of £290 was raised at the Royal Agricultural Benevolent Institution. Ali Wright, a resident whose son has been helped by RABA, spoke to visitors throughout the morning promoting the work of the charity. The next Community Cafe will be at the Victoria Hall, Sutton Scotney, 9:30 a.m. until midday on Wednesday, July the 20th. It will raise funds for the Winchester Bereavement Support, a small voluntary association that offers free support to bereaved people in Winchester and the surrounding areas.
Thank you, Ros. Tom, please.
Dramatic photos show M27 car fire. Major delays were caused by a vehicle fire on the M27. It happened on Friday, June the 24th morning, between Junction 3 and Junction 4 eastbound. Hampshire Police tweeted, eastbound lanes 1 and 2 closed for significant time due to car fire and diesel spill. The exit onto the M3 Eastleigh Slip Road is still open, but obstructed due to the lane closures, so allow extra time. Road will need resurfacing. This message was posted at around midday, but some hours after the car burst into flames. People who saw the incident shared dramatic photos to social media and to our system titled the Daily Echo. According to AA Traffic, there was congestion leading all the way to Junction 2 for Romsey.
Thank you, Tom. Claire, please.
City centre businesses struggling to find staff. More than 40 jobs are up for grabs in Winchester city centre as businesses have been left struggling from lack of staff. Numerous shops and restaurants in the city centre currently have staff wanted signs plastered in their windows, with business owners saying it is in response to desperation surrounding labour shortages in the area. During a short walk along the High Street and adjacent roads, it is impossible not to notice the staggering number of shops, cafes and pubs looking for workers. Business owners say the vacuum has been created by the rise of flexible remote working, the pandemic causing an overqualified workforce and distaste for a 5-day work week. With many shops operating on reduced hours and, in the most extreme cases, considering closure, employers in Winchester say they are crumbling under the pressure to fill staff positions. Phil Baldock, Regional Operations Manager at the shop and cafe Chococo, said, "No one wants full-time work anymore. People only want to work 3 or 4 days a week. Our industry has also lost out a lot due to COVID. A lot of places have had to resort to reduced days because we just can't fill staff's positions. We still have students asking for part-time work, but people don't see this job as a career anymore. Especially with the lockdowns, people had time to get online qualifications and get out of this industry." He called for a different way of working to help the situation. He said, "We need a different plan of action. Things like hiring 5 people part-time to do the job of 2 full-time employees should hopefully keep businesses like ours going. Lots of places are running on survival mode. It's not just cafes that are struggling to find reliable full-time workers. Signs are up in a whole range of retail windows. However, some shops are hopeful for full recovery post-COVID without the need for new employment for tactics." Wendy Ward, floor manager at Fabric and Craft Shop Cross and Hamblin, said, "We've been trying to recruit for over a year. There's been some success over the past 6 weeks. People were happy during COVID to sit at home, but now that's mostly over, we should have some new people potentially starting."
Thank you, Claire.
Right, sorry, right. Peter.
Officer assaulted. A large police presence was seen in Winchester city centre after a PCSO, that's Police Constable Support Officer, I think, was assaulted. The incident took place in Abbey Gardens on Friday, June the 24th, resulting in a dispersal order being issued until Sunday, June the 26th. The order gave police officers the power to move people committing antisocial behaviour. Emergency services rushed to the scene after the PCSO was assaulted when they detained a man for theft. Winchester Police posted on its Facebook page, "You may have seen a large police presence in the city centre this evening as local officers responded to an incident in Abbey Gardens, Winchester. This incident took place after one of our PCSOs responded to reports of a theft. During this incident, the PCSO detained a male and was assaulted, but luckily not injured. Officers from the local neighbourhood and high harm teams assisted and 2 people were arrested. Antisocial behaviour and violence towards our officers will not be tolerated and will be dealt with robustly. We would like to thank the public for their patience and understanding whilst we dealt with this incident." Now, these latest events follow a spate of antisocial behaviour in the city centre to do with drinking, drug taking, criminal damage and shoplifting. Some have claimed the issue stems from the removal of drinkers from the wall at King's Walk. Now, Ros, please.
This is jolly, this one. Guests get into the swing of a 600-year-old barn for charity. A 600-year-old barn in Old Orsford was the scene of loud music, feasting and dancing as a charity funders from Home Start, Winchester, staged nostalgic nights of musical and good food. Special guests included the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Derek Green, and his family, who dined under swards and swathes of bunting and pretty fairy lights. The Casbah Swing Band supplied musical treats, not just for the big band era, but much loved standards in the big band sound. although full of a hog roast prepared by sole butchers. Guests were quickly on their feet, truly getting into the spring. More culinary treats followed, with homemade chocolate roulade, fresh fruit salads and cheesecakes made by Homestart's volunteers. We are so grateful to our patron, Alison Wakeman, for letting us use her wonderful barn in Pinklestone. Lovely name. And Homestart's event organiser, Chrissy Barlow. And to our sponsor, Billy Rolls Classic Cars, for making the night possible. The Bill Rolls Cars racing team supplied a 250 BHP 1961 Austin Healey 300 Mark I racing car, and the boys couldn't resist taking a look under the bonnet.
Yes, thank you, Rose.
That's all right, it's a pleasure.
Tom, please.
Winchester Hospital service is back to normal. Normal service has been resumed at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester after severe IT problems. The issues came as a result of a workman damaging a fibre optic cable at a building site in the Dummer area near Basingstoke and affected broadband at around 4,000 houses. Following the problems, there was a backlog of patients, but services have now caught up. Patients could not be booked in, files could not be accessed, operations were delayed and X-ray sessions were postponed. Staff had to return to working with pen and paper.
Shock horror.
No.
Openreach engineers worked without a break to repair the damage and restore the main connection to the NHS sites. A spokesman from Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust said the IT technical issues experienced across our sites as a result of off-site construction work were resolved on June the 10th, after which our recovery plans were quickly implemented and normal service resumed. An Openreach spokesman said, following 2 weeks of repair work, engineers have restored services to our network in Basingstoke. While we were able to repair all fibre cables by the 14th of June, the scale and nature of the damage to copper network meant that it took longer to repair. All homes and businesses in and around Basingstoke should now be back online. We'd like once again to thank everyone affected for their patience and remind everyone to contact their provider if they have any further faults.
Thank you, Tom. Claire, please.
Well, this isn't the nicest one to read to you, but I will.
Oh,
good.
Sewage on the high street.
Ah.
No good giggling.
No.
Raw sewage was strewn across Winchester High Street after torrential rain led to drains overflowing. Pedestrians were left retching after they having to sidestep human waste near the Buttercross as downpours began on Monday, June 27th. One woman described the dreadful smell as the drains bubbled up, spewing the contaminated water onto the street. A clean-up operation led by Winchester City Council is already underway, with crews seen picking up some of the debris and pouring chemicals onto the affected areas. Southern Water said it was sending out an engineer to assess the situation.
Thank you, Claire. Well, but my last piece is actually a little more cheerful. It's headed Timeless Fate raises £12,500. The Timeless Hospital of St Cross Fate is still going strong and celebrated 154 years last Saturday, writes Orla Soy. More than 2,000 people stepped back into the past to enjoy attractions that hardly changed, from Punch and Judy and Morris dancers to a merry-go-round and Victorian glassware. Organiser Jill Beck said, It really is just the same as it's always been. It's always a fun afternoon for the community to get together. People have been flooding in. I'd say the only difference is the number of people. We've already had around 2,000 today, and the fete's only been open a few hours. Visitors Joan Mill and Mary Tutton said, "We've never seen so many people. It's always nice to come here to see the lovely gardens." The day had everything that you could expect from a traditional village fete, including raffles, book and card stalls, homemade cake sales, face painting and hoopla. As well as a steam train, bumper cars and bouncy castle, all set in the idyllic grounds of St. Hot Cross Hospital. It raised £12,500 and was sponsored by Carter Jonas Estate Agents and Shenton's Solicitors. Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we've got time for this week. But before we go, here's another reminder that Liz Legris is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her contact number, again, is on the key fob attached to your memory stick. Thanks to all the support teams for the editing, preparation and dispatch of this edition. And, of course, many thanks to our readers, Roz.
Goodbye.
Tom.
Goodbye.
Claire.
Bye.
And from me, Peter. Until next time, goodbye. And please put the memory stick in the wallet when you have finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible. Goodbye.